Hey there, you're welcome to Founders Connect, a show where I have conversations with amazing entrepreneurs and operators in Africa. This is the right show for you to be listening to if you love behind-the-scenes stories about people, their careers, and all their businesses. My name is PC Timmy, and I'm very, very, very delighted to be your host. You can follow this conversation on social media, hashtag Founders Connect. You can watch the video of each episode on my YouTube channel at PC Timmy, or just search for Founders Connect on YouTube to find the playlist. Also, please share this podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, leave a rating, and you know, share it, hashtag Founders Connect. Enjoy the episode. Hey guys, my name is PC Timmy. I'm the host of Founders Connect. Welcome to another episode. Here I have conversations with amazing entrepreneurs and operators in the African tech ecosystem. Today, I'm having a conversation with Moses. He's the founder and CEO of Topship. Let's say hi to Moses. Hi, Moses.
Hey, hi, Piz. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here as well.
I'm a big fan, like I said earlier.
I'm a big fan as well. I've been following your journey from Sendbox and then our Topship, so I'm really excited to hear all about it. So let's start. Tell me where you're from.
So I'm born and raised in Jos. Had my entire childhood there. Both parents were business people. My dad was an architect, is an architect and a builder. So
I thought you were going to say billionaire just now.
My God. Right. Builder, and you know, was involved in construction, but also very entrepreneurial. Did a bunch of things while we were growing up. My mom worked at the Bank of Agriculture. So very, you know, very quiet childhood. Jos, in my opinion, is one of the best places in Nigeria. And that was where I was, basically had my entire life, primary and secondary school there until I went to university.
Which university did you go to?
So I went to London, went to the UK, University of Hertfordshire, studied economics. Then I wanted to work on Wall Street, so that was my dream, right? I wanted to be a, you know, hedge fund, you know, that whole thing. And then, of course, went to university. While I was there, I started experimenting with a bunch of different businesses. First thing we tried to do was to open a restaurant. Didn't work. That failed horribly. We tried to run a sort of like an event organizing business where we would pay for artists to come to the small town where we were in school and perform. Mm-hmm. And then we'd make money from selling the tickets. So I partnered with someone that was a promoter, and I didn't know anything about it, but I partnered with him and then did that. It worked sometimes it didn't work. We had a horrible experience, and so we left it. Tried a bunch of other things, but then eventually, my mom was telling me about coffee farmers in Jos, because she worked at the Bank of Agriculture, so she knew a lot of farmers, smallholder farmers. And so she would tell me about these coffee farmers that were farming Arabica coffee beans. And they had high production, but very little distribution. No one was buying coffee beans, right? And so she found a way to get the coffee beans from Jos, from the farmers in Jos, to me in the UK. And then we would roast it and blend it and then distribute it to...
So you had your coffee brand?
It wasn't a brand like that. It was just a hustle, right? Right. I mean, remember, we were 18 years old at the time, right? So, we tried to make it a legit business, but it was messy, but it worked. We ran it under the university's incubation umbrella, so it sort of made it easy for us to not pay taxes, for example, and do a bunch of other things. So we did that. I did that from when I entered university till when I left university.
And that was how many, like 4 years?
That was 3 years.
3 years.
3 years for the entire university. And then, of course, when we finished university, everybody went their separate ways. Everybody dumped it because they didn't need it anymore. Also, it didn't make sense to continue because now you have to start paying taxes and comply and do everything right. And then, so I finished university. And, of course, the Wall Street dream by that time had died away because reality had set in. Funny thing was, there's a regulation that if you schooled in the UK, you would get, I think, 3 years to work in any company you could get. And then the year we were graduating, we were so unlucky. The year we were graduating, they scrapped the regulation.
Oh, that was your
so
year.
So it was us, yes. So all of us had to come back, right? So funny thing was, I was like, okay, what am I going to do now? An aunt had told me about a job opening at Ernst & Young. So I sent my CV to Ernst & Young and I got in, literally. And so that was my first job. So I came back to Nigeria to work at EY in Nigeria, and I was doing transfer pricing, and it was a good learning experience in general, like holistically, but the actual consulting wasn't really for
me. I could see you already thinking about I hated that job.
So there were so many factors. You know, it's a completely different environment. It's an amazing place to learn, first of all. I think most people that start their careers in management consulting or any of the big fours, they tend to have a leg up, you know, very marketable, good brand. a strong brand presence. The actual work for me, I wasn't on fire. I didn't like it. And I saw people that actually liked it working with me. Like my senior, who just made partner, by the way.
Right,
Tokwe. And he really, really, really liked it. And he was on fire. He would work nights and he would come every Saturday and Sunday. And I didn't have that fire. And I was like, let me go and find the thing right? Because like I was like, I'm wasting my time if this guy's on fire and I'm here and I'm just complaining every day. And so I kept looking for stuff. My younger brother, of course, was also like in Lagos and he was, you know, he's a digital marketer, so he was working with a lot of people in tech. And so one day we went for an event. I heard about, so it was a company called StuTurn. That was funny enough, the founders are my very good friend, Kende and Taiwo. And, you know, they were having a sort of like masterclass somewhere in Yaba, and I heard about Tunde Kende. And so I sent Tunde Kende a cold email on LinkedIn, and I told him, hey, I want to come work for you. I heard that you just left Jumia and you started this new company called Ace, and I want to come work for you. And he said, hey, Moses, the only job available is sales, door-to-door sales. And no one wants that job. Are you going to take it? And I was like, sure, I'll take it.
Interesting.
And so I left Ernst & Young, strong brand. My parents were proud, always telling people, my son works at UL.
I went to be knocking on doors.
And I literally took a pay cut and came to work for this tech logistics startup, right?
Was there something particular about Ace at that time, or was it about Tunde?
I think, to be honest with you, it was more about Tunde, the founder, right? And just seeing how what they had built with Jumia and the progress that I made, and the type of person that he was, of course, that he is. I think those are the things that I was really following him as opposed to just the job or whatever. So it wasn't really the industry. I didn't pick the industry. So that was my entry into this space. That was sort of like the transition.
Yeah.
In between all that, there were, of course, a bunch of small random experiments that I tried that probably didn't work out. But ultimately, that was it. And so when I went, after we cold emailed each other, I went and I had a conversation with him. He invited me to his office. We had a 3-hour conversation and then he gave me a job.
So what was it about Ace that you liked most, or like what was the biggest lesson you learned from the time that you worked at Ace?
Yeah, I'll say the thing I enjoyed the most in terms of like the contrast between Ernst & Young and Ace for me was every day you had to be accountable. You had to wake up every morning and chase those numbers. No matter what, if it's raining, if there's flood in Lagos, if there's a thunderstorm, it didn't matter. And it gave me that high-paced, competitive environment that I was craving, which was why the whole Wall Street thing was there. And I actually enjoyed it. I was actually weird. I enjoyed the door-to-door sales. I enjoyed the daily drive and the daily target. And Tunde was an amazing sales leader, in my opinion. And so that was the thing. I started to feel what Tokwe from EY, you know, that drive. And so, yeah, so that was it. I mean, even though a lot of people don't like sales because it's tough.
Yeah. Right?
But I personally enjoy it because, I don't know, for some reason. Yeah, so I think that was the thing that I would say I enjoyed the most. The biggest lesson from Ace for me is really, the same reason why I enjoyed the work there. And that is, I don't think anything is worth it if you're not pursuing something that doesn't deeply interest you. Mm. And especially when you can afford to pursue it, right? And so I think that was the thing, because when I had left, even with the pay cuts, even though I was broke-ish, I was happy every day. I was going, I was embracing the days where I would get beat up. I would still wake up every morning and go back, you know. And so it wasn't all rosy. There were tough days, but I would still relish every battle. And so that was, for me, I was like, okay, this is good. I need to stay on this fire, right? And so that was the number one thing that I learned.
So I'm curious, right? Beyond like when you got into Ace, right? It was because like you believed in the founder.
Yes.
And then you stayed there for a couple of months, like more than 1 year, and then you moved to Sandbox and you're doing top ship. You've done logistics after that.
Yeah.
So what was it that you found about logistics at Ace that's now made that your path?
Yeah. So the story, like again, like I said, so first of all, before I even continue, let me just say, I initially really hated this industry. Right, and again, because it's
not even a sexy industry.
It's not, you know, like you'd rather be fintech or, you know, so I just saw it as, oh, let me just learn this thing, right? I'm going to go and do something else later, eventually. But so there's a whole story behind it.
Please tell me.
And some of the accounts that I'd managed at the time, the people who had sort of like the largest fashion e-commerce brand in Nigeria at the time, and they were one of my clients at Ace. They were winding down the startup because they had some challenges in supply chain. Mm. And so we were very close. We were very, very good together. And we're friends, we're still friends. And they called me and said, hey, we want to start this thing to solve this problem that we had. And we want you to join us. Mm. And I said, And the funny thing was, at around that same time, I had one, I had another friend of mine who was telling me about sort of like the business that he had run with his family and how supply chain was a big problem. And he had just took over from his father's tannery and supply chain was a big problem. And I remember, I didn't take it seriously, but I remember it came up. So when that opportunity came, to, I was like, okay, yeah, you know, maybe. And so that was how I went from Ace to Sendbox. And coincidentally, those guys are the founders of Sendbox.
Right. Yes. So tell me about Sendbox, the almost 5 years that you spent there. That was so, a long time.
There was back and forth. So I joined, I had started, and I was there for a couple of, maybe 1 year, 1 year plus. And then I had left to go do something else, and then I had come back. Right. So Sendbox there was a phase where it was just sort of like figuring out what the business model, what the model was going to be. And under the leadership of the founders, right? And so we were really just testing out different stuff. It was software as a service initially, I think. And there was all the things that we did. And so eventually when the model was figured out, I came back. So we were testing out the models on different levels. Eventually the model was figured out, I came back and then sort of stayed there. That was the second time. So it wasn't the full time, but there was
a break. So what did you leave to go do?
So I left initially. So yeah, very interesting question. So I left in between to start a consulting company. And it was a total disaster, right? And so here's the story behind that. It was a friend of mine who had told me about an opportunity in sort of like digitizing. They were doing electric meters for someone in Ogun State, an opportunity. And so we wanted to do consulting gig for them. And there was this big contract and all that stuff. And my instincts told me, you know, just keep building where you're building. I know it's hard and it's like you're in the deep end and there's no lights in the at the end of the tunnel, but just stay. But I was like, yeah, but there's opportunity, you can get, you know, be a big, you know, and so that was what I left to go and do. And I went and we did it. Initially everything seemed to be going well. And then one day we just got an email saying that they had given what we had promised to someone else, and it was just like, and there's nothing you can do. I mean, that's the way contracts work, you know. And so It was a very big lesson, you know, don't go against your instincts, right? Mm. So that was what I left to go do. Coincidentally, when I had left, when we were just about to wind it down, Emotu, the founder of Sendbox, sort of called me and told me that, hey, you know, there's something that we've sort of figured out and I want to give it a try.
Right. And so that was an easy opportunity to go back.
I was like, okay, sure, why not? Let's do it again. So that was basically it.
Right. And then obviously you left Sendbox to do Topship. So let's talk about
yeah. So that story. So it was basically COVID 2020, and the world had basically was shut down from March, and when the world shut down, because I've been in sort of this space for a very long time. A lot of people know me within sort of like shipping, or so they make inquiries with me a lot. And I realized that the world shut down. There was this sort of the friend that I've spoken about that had a tannery had also reached out, a couple of people that have reached out. And I'm wondering, okay, they have this high demand to ship stuff. Everyone's talking about how they needed to move stuff around the world, and everybody was shut down. And so we had made some inquiries around how to move stuff since people were shut down. Most people would use a courier partner, for example, like DHL, to move stuff around the world. And so if DHL had fragmented services, you notice that they're just across board, everybody's, because everyone's relying on their infrastructure.
Yeah.
So that was the first time where we realized that we could use passenger planes to move stuff around the world. And so Topship started was a couple of people had reached out to me and had asked about how to move stuff. And they had some stuff that they wanted to move. It was Pampers out of the country, right? And it was a large volume. And so they had been bugging me, and I didn't have to get them off my back. And so I reached out to someone that I knew who worked at NACO. Mm. And he said, hey, okay, yes, there's a passenger plane, we can put it in.
And that was it.
It didn't start as a company. It wasn't like a grand plan to start a company. It was just, oh yeah, and then he told someone else about it, and then they told other people, and then they just started bringing volumes. And so it didn't start as a company. It was just solving the problem for those people, really trying to get that person in my back,
yeah.
Right? And so that was how I was sort of like snowballed into what it is today.
Two questions, right? Mm-hmm. One, how was that snowballing? So how did you get from, oh, this person referred me, I still have a contact, so okay, you know what? I can make this an actual company and start raising for it. And two, what about your experience at Ace and Sendbox has affected what you're doing now?
Right. So I'll start the second question first. I'll say both sort of experiences, you know, again, it's learnings, right? Sendbox solving social commerce. Ace was trying to solve last mile logistics. Mm. And we're building, and again, I'll talk about what we're building later, but ultimately those learnings, there's so many resources from trying to solve things from the operator side. Mm. And so for me, I would say, because I've been a merchant importing coffee beans when I was in university, combined that with the timer. So I just have that sort of like, it just closed the loop for me. Mm. I think I would have been ill prepared to solve this problem if I didn't have that operator side view of how the industry works. But I think the merchant side as well is even more important in my opinion. And so really the things that it had helped me with really is just giving me sort of like that foundation. But ultimately at the end of the day, because it's a problem that still hasn't been solved, there's just the unknown is bigger than what the knowledge we've gained so far, right? So there's still so much more to know. And if you ask me, I would want to unlearn a lot of the things that I've learned in those two places, because again, the problem has not been solved. We need sort of like a blank slate thinking. Right. And that's why it even informs the way we hire people. We don't feel, so I'll say we hire maybe 80% people from other walks of life and like 20% industry veterans, so that we have some light sort of balance. But I want it overwhelmingly on the fresh minds so that we can actually innovate. Mm. And so I would say it helped me with the foundation for like industry operation knowledge, but that's the way it's helping me and where we are and what we're doing right now.
And the second question was about how taking it from that, oh, I want to get this person on my back to now this is a company I want to
do. So initially it just kept going that way. And this was July 2020, and I had resigned from Sendbox at the time.
What made you resign?
So when COVID happened, I think COVID really changed everything about the world, right? For the first time ever, everybody was at home, just doing nothing. And so I think a lot of people's worldview changed. I think I'm definitely one of those people. And I just realized that I would rather be solving a problem that sort of like I was interested in. Mm. And so for me, I hadn't decided on what to be. Again, like I said, I hated logistics, right? It was just very tough, very difficult. It's still very difficult. A lot of young people don't jump into logistics. They would pick fintech over just 9 out of 10 times. But I was thinking of what else I was going to do at the time, but was solving this problem at the side because there was this hustle going on. I'd gotten two people to help me just on a part-time basis. One of them is still with us, to help me fulfill stuff so I can go and do other things, right? So they respond to messages, and, you know, and do all that stuff. And then that was just how it was going. And so that continued to happen. I think the interesting part was towards the end of the year, I traveled, for example, to see that friend of mine and a couple of other people, merchants that we had worked with. And I think that trip, meeting with those merchants, sort of started to build my conviction in the problem we were solving and how big of a problem it was. And the funny thing is, even in Lagos, where we, so for example, we live, the biggest and the most effective last mile or nationwide delivery hub or delivery center is Jibowu bus stop. Literally.
I didn't see that coming.
Right? And that's where everybody, if you ask someone down the road, I want to dispatch something to Kogi, that's where he's going to. That's the first place coming to his mind. He's not going to try to flip up his phone or his app. Like, so there's a big disconnect and there really hasn't been much innovation there. So my conviction started to get deeper. And so I started talking to my friends and people that I had known and tried to get people to join me on board, you know, to actually build it out. And so as my conviction continued to get deeper, you know, I had gotten my friend Junaid, who's our CTO and co-founder, to join me to actually build the tech stack online programmer, right? And then we said, okay, let's actually make it a real thing. Let's build it, because we've been doing this as a hustle, as a side for a very long time. But now
that long time was probably like 1 year.
So it was About 1 year. Yeah. And so around March 2020, we decided to make it official and launch. And then we raised a small angel round of funding and then hired a couple of people and then structured it properly. So the actual official launch was March 2021, last year. But it was, I would say it was born in summer of 2020 during COVID. Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you talk a lot about innovation. Even when you're talking about the kind of people that you hire, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, we need people that are not veterans so that they can innovate. And just mm-hmm. like, oh, how last mile delivery is still a thing, but people are not. So how exactly is Topship innovating around
yeah.
this problem?
Yeah. So again, I think the most, and that's like a very good question because it goes back to what you said about, when you asked me about my the lessons I learned from two places. The most important piece of the puzzle is are the merchants. Mm. And a lot of people historically in the industry build more for operators, for themselves.
We
really believe that the merchant is the nucleus of the entire thing, right? Mm. So our strategy is always to put the merchant at the center. We're obsessive mm-hmm. about merchants, and it goes into the way we built our products. And there's one thing I always tell the team is my opinion on the product and the way it works and all that stuff and how it looks and the design is not as important as the merchant is the most important thing. So I can build something that looks good to me, makes me feel good about myself, it's fresh, but the people, the users wouldn't use it, right? And so I think for us, really putting the merchant at the center and following the merchant's pains and problems and the things that they do, that they are doing well, the things they're not doing as well, the things they use well, just following the merchant, I think for us is the center of that innovation. Mm. That's first of all, right? So that is, I think, the thing that is extremely unique about us, and we take it spiritually, right? And so that's on one side. And on the other side, in terms of like building out the actual product on the back and the operations, you know, and that's where the challenge is. How do we like look at the entire industry differently, right? Because it's very easy to stay in that sort of like treadmill of how things have been done, and you know. So I would say on the operations side, we just tend to think, say, okay, assume this wasn't there. Mm. Right, take the entire lid off. What do we need to do to make it happen, right? For mm-hmm. example. And so that's the thinking on the operation side that helps us to improve the product. That's still a work in progress. But on the merchant side, I would say 100% we follow the merchants obsessively. For example, some of the things we've done to the product, if you look at the product evolution since we launched, right now we have sort of like API plugins for merchants that have e-commerce stores. That wasn't there initially. We built that because we started to get demand for it.
Right.
We're following the merchants. We have a grant, for example, grants to fashion e-commerce businesses that just got concluded. That's something that we sort of like merchant insights drove as well. And then another thing is, of course, also our API, open up our APIs just in general, of course, is also another thing. And again, all the other things that we're building, for example, plugins for social commerce integration, because we've seen a lot of our merchants use social commerce to move stuff. And so for us, that's the sort of like, we follow the merchants, right? And if we go to the sort of like the hub, for example, in Kano or somewhere, or Dar or Salaam in Tanzania, and we notice a certain trend or behavior, that will inform sort of like our decision making. We won't come with sort of like just industry best practices on the operator side and then just say, this is how we're going to do it here. We'll build it around the merchant's problem. So I would say to me, that would be my answer to that question, yeah. right? I think that's something that we try as much as possible to just keep reinforcing to the team that the merchant is the most important piece of the puzzle. And nothing else matters if we are not making them happy, if we're not solving their problem.
Yeah, that makes sense. And while you're just thinking, I was like, oh, there's some people who would watch now and they still don't know what Topship does. So a layman, yes. right? How would you describe Topship?
Yeah, so I would say Topship is the easiest way for you to ship anything from wherever you are to any part of the world.
But what if I'm not a merchant?
So anyone, right? It's, our goal is to make it as simple as, I know this thing has been flogged to death, booking an Uber, right? or booking a plane ticket, for example. Everyone can go on Wakana and book a plane ticket, right? And so that's the end goal. And so That's who we are. That's the simplest way to put it, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know that you guys raised money recently, a lot of money.
Thank you.
Thinking about when you launched in May 2021, raising an angel fund that time, to when you just recently raised the seed of 2.5, that's not a very long time, right?
Yeah.
How did you guys do? What was the journey to fundraising like?
So it's interesting. So when we started, we reached out to I reached out to one person in my network, and he got two other investors to basically give us a pre-seed round or angel round. And then we just hit the ground running and continued to build. And then I was having a conversation with another founder who told me, you guys need to like scale this thing. And I just kept thinking, okay, how? Because again, one of the things that I try to keep reminding myself of is that, you know, it's the merchants that matters. We're building for the merchants. Don't get caught up in the whole VC funding. Yeah, you're not a VC, right? And it's very, very important to keep that discipline. So I don't think about fundraising, and so he brought it up and I just kept thinking, how do you raise a seed round, right? Right? And because we had tried, rewind back to 10 years ago, we had tried to raise money for one of our ventures in university and it went horribly bad. And even the pre-seed round that we had done, or the angel round that we had done, it was very confusing. There were all these documents and all these things. And so, so when he told me that, I told my brother, I'd never thought about applying for YC because it's so competitive. YC rejects the smartest people, right? And when you hear people that applied 5 times, you're like, what? You know, I heard people that YC rejects, and you're like, what? And so I never thought about it. And so I didn't want to apply because I didn't want to get my heart broken. But I kept thinking, this is like the best way to raise the seed round.
Right.
And so I just sent the application. I filled the application, got my co-founder, CTO. She read it, and then we sent it. And then we just moved on. We just continued building what we're building, right? And then they called us for an interview. And we had two interviews, funny enough. We had one interview with a couple of partners and Michael. And then they asked us a couple of questions, and then 30 days later, they invited us for another call.
Right.
And so, right, I mean, the thing is, when you apply to YC, you just apply and move on with your life. That's the best thing, because it's just a lot of nerves, right? So, so after we had the second call, we had gone home, and it was the middle of the night, and I just got a call from the partner at YC telling me that they wanted to invest. And so we got in at the first application, first try ever. And that was just like, oh my God. I remember when we did like the meetup, everyone was like, oh, I've applied 10 times. You see like startups that are doing like 30 million ARR and they're saying that they applied 5 times. And I'm like, what? You know, and so I think, so when we got into YC, of course, YC really helped and to guide us on how to raise the actual seed round. And for me, I think that it was way easier because we had gone that route. It would have still been possible without, but I think that was the sort of like the switch. And so YC gives you like advice and helps you, and then you have partners that you can talk to. And then if you have something you want to share with them, you send it to them, they'll look at it for you. So there's a lot of benefits. So it makes it significantly easier.
That makes sense.
And they also help you with intros, actually, funny enough. The CEO of YC, Michael, introduced us to pretty much most of the key investors that invested in our round. You know, and so that was how that happened. It wasn't like as difficult as the previous one.
That makes sense. Is there one or two things that you're most proud of in the last 18 months of building TopShip?
Wow. Okay. So I would say the team especially the leadership team we've gotten right now, right? And when I started. When we started, or I was doing everything myself, and it was, right? So it was, for lack of a better word, it was extremely difficult and messy. But I'd say we've been able to get people that are, I like to say, spirit animals, right? People that believe in the vision and are driven, right? And are carrying it on their back as well. That's something that you can't buy with money. And so I always tell people, I say starting a company or a startup is similar to founding a church or a ministry, right? You're starting from zero. you have to convince someone to leave their well-paying and come and join you on your mission, right? And so it's beyond just throwing money at people. Even if you have the money, you still need to sell. They still need to buy into that vision. You're like, And so I would say that's the thing that I'm most proud of, that we have somehow been able to, number one, have a very good employee retention rate. And then number two, like put together a pretty good team of people that are driven and hardworking and crushing it, but also kind and nice and are not like mean.
That's
like
a really good combination.
Which is something that I wouldn't have had if I worked on Wall Street, by the way. Because Wall Street is the opposite, right? Everyone is mean there, apparently.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, just before you answer that question, my next question was going to be like, you speak a lot about we. Like when you were talking about the coffee business in school, you were saying we. When you talked about joining age, it's like we is a constant in your language.
Right.
So it makes sense that the thing that you're most proud of is
right,
your team.
Right.
And it's great, but I'm wondering now, what's the recipe? So if I want to start my own company, how do I build a team that is a spirit animal but also kind and driven and have the mix?
Yeah. So I think the first mistake I made with on the people's side happened when way back when I was in university starting one of those our businesses, right? In school. And I'd gotten one of the smartest people in the class to join me. Extremely smart guy who was a friend of mine, who was an Iranian, smart guy, amazing guy, and just a brilliant. I looked for the smartest person I could find, and I sold him. And then he said, yeah, let's do it. But it did work out. It was horrible. It was a disaster, right? And so I learned that you don't go for the smartest person.
Mm.
You go for... So the profile of the person you're looking for, again, back to my church analogy, you're looking for someone who's a missionary, right? So beyond just being smart and hardworking and resourceful, this person is, for example, let me give you an illustration. This person can be a Harvard MBA grad, but is still willing to go on the streets in Balogun Market and evangelize, right? And you don't need to be the ones who force them. Like that's the profile of the person you're looking for. And so beyond just being smart and knowing how to execute and being hardworking, everybody has that. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Right? It's the spirit. Like, are they there? Are they with you? Right? And to me, that's the most important thing. And like people talk about like working with people and people having two side things. No, like if the person's spirit is with you, that's all you need. They will do it. You won't have to ask them to do it. They're there, right? So for me, I think that's the thing you look out for. If you were a child and you wanted to, I don't know, build a mud house, who would you call? That's probably the person you should call as your co-founder. It might be counterintuitive because the person may not fit the, you know, whatever, you know, but like, that might be the person that will stay there and actually build with you, right? And because, again, I've learned that it's less about like raw intelligence and more about learning and iterating and being patient and
being
staying
work.
Right? So it's really, you know, so that's the thing that I'll say everybody should look out for, in my opinion, if you're looking for people. So you're looking for that pack, right? The people that are with you, especially at the leadership level, right? That's what I would say.
Makes sense. Aside being people driven, right? Because I mean, from your very first venture, you're already looking for someone to build with. Are there any other principles or life lessons that kind of guides how you build as a person, not just only a company, but also maybe how you live life?
Yeah. So again, the one thing that I think maybe I learned from my parents and that I've started to learn a lot recently is nobody knows anything. And so everyone should be humble, right? And keep your head down, stay focused, it's the discipline. That's where, and so I think like, because again, like when I was way younger, I thought I was the smartest person in the world, right? I finished university, I was feeling hot, you know, I would always be like, but then with time I've learned that, okay, you know, you don't know anything, stay humble, right? And always ask questions. So like, I think for me, that's the thing that has stayed with me the most, right? Is the next stage is you need to now calm down and stay focused and be disciplined and be humble and nobody knows anything. This is everyone likes to give advice. Nobody really knows anything. I remember if you ask people what would have happened, people that made plans in 2019, they didn't know where the world was going. The world has changed forever since then, right? And so no one forecasted. I mean, how many people? So it's like no one knows anything. And so you also don't know, right? And so however that guides your decision making, I think that's like the thing that you should always have at the back of your head. And so one of the things it helps me to do is it helps me not to be overconfident.
Mm.
It also helps me not to be, you know, I'm going to say an asshole, right? And just be treat people better. And I think that that's just generally something you need to carry with you everywhere you go. So for me, that's foundational. I don't think of myself as someone who, you know how people say, call themselves serial entrepreneurs. I honestly don't. My entire life, ever since I was a child, we've been building stuff. My dad had a nursery at the backyard. He ran a fashion business on the side, right? Making like a direct clothing and exporting. This was like 2003. And as a child, my earliest memories are following him to the sites, working all those different experiments. That has been my life. My younger brother is exactly the same way. And so I honestly don't think of myself in that structure. I actually just do it, right?
Yeah.
And just execute on stuff that's important. And so for me, that's like on that side. But I'll say ultimately at the end of the day, you don't know. And there's something someone always said is, I can't remember where I heard it, but it said, the god of the underdog never sleeps. Right? I read it somewhere. And that's so true.
It's right? A punchline.
Yeah. Right? Like, as you're going ahead in life, you know, you might meet people and maybe you met them 8 years ago and they were at a certain stage. We have the tendency to assume that when we meet them 8 years later, they're still not the same person. Right? And this, right? So it's very, very, it's easy to say, it's hard to practice because human beings are obsessed with themselves, right? And everybody thinks they're the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's, I think, the thing that sort of like keep me centered. Yeah. Monk mode, right? Stay sober, stay focused, vigilant.
Yeah. You don't know anything. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. My final question is there any question that you would have wanted me to ask you that I didn't ask you?
Interesting.
Or anything you would have wanted to answer, but somehow we didn't get to it.
Is there anything? You don't think so? Nothing? I can't think
so
of
I did
anything.
A good job.
I can't think
and
of
I was
anything.
Like...
I think we covered everything. Yeah. I think we covered everything. And again, all the questions I had for you, I asked before we started speaking. Right?
So, fair enough.
So, yeah, I think we covered everything.
That's amazing. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, my final question is a question from Treasure. She says, mm-hmm. do you have any advice for people who want to start and expand their businesses? Especially in this, because everybody's raising money now. So, there's
Yeah.
It's like the way to get that Benz is for me to raise money and just extend my own company.
So I would say don't. Okay. So first of all, don't try to start a company first. Just try to, you know, think about it differently. What's the problem that can be solved? What are you really good at? Like, there's a metrics that you need to figure out, like inner metrics. Don't just do it for a company's sake. That's first of all. Secondly is, if it is a tech company, apply to YC. Thirdly, if that company has anything to do,
and if YC doesn't take you, apply 10 times once it
keep
does.
Applying. They like that. They actually like that. They like people to tell those stories. And then if you're solving the problem if you're a really strong operator, you're really strong, really smart, resourceful, and you're solving or you're interested in supply chain, don't try to start the company. Just send me an email.
We'll
find a place for you.
That was really smooth, but that was amazing. It's been amazing speaking to
Thank you.
I think that the one thing that a couple of things that's sticking with me is one is kind of how everything in your journey has come together to inform what you're building now. Like when you talk about being in school and your mom is exporting coffee and now you're doing that same. Now you're the one helping people export stuff.
Yeah.
And then just like being able to know that, oh, EY was not for me, but then work in different companies until where you get here. So like, even if you fail at first, if you just keep doing what you're doing along the way, you will find what you're supposed to do eventually. So 100%. That's definitely sticking with me. And then just your language and just saying we and our, and just centering yourself around finding the best people, the spirit animals, the missionaries. That definitely sticks as well. And the god of the underdog doesn't sleep.
Yes, the god of the underdog doesn't sleep.
That's a preach kind of line. That's amazing. All right, thank you so much, Moses,
thank
for
you.
Having
thank
this
you,
conversation with me.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast to the end. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. I hope that you have been inspired or motivated to get better in your careers, in your businesses, in your life. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the videos on my YouTube channel at PC Timmy, or just search for Founders Connect and you'll find the playlist and then subscribe to the channel. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening to it. Leave a rating also so more people can find it, and also talk about the episode that you listen to. #FoundersConnect across social media. Hey, I'll see you in the next episode. Peace out.
Thank you.